So if I can give you a very, very quick example. So I had a client that had $400,000 sitting in an offset account and their bank accounts were all over the place, all right? So good money coming in. And I just said to them, look, would you mind going back a year and having a look to see what was in the offset account? And interestingly enough, in this case, the wife came back to me a little bit, you know, feeling sheepish because the account was sitting at $400,000 12 months ago. So even though they felt like they were doing okay, it was that, you know, we felt comfortable because we had the money in an offset account. It wasn't because they were really genuinely growing, if that makes sense.
Yep, I understand. Yep.
Hello and welcome to the Help My Wealth podcast, Money Rules or Money Rules. Here at Help My Wealth, we are all about empowering financial success in our community of listeners. We hope you find today's topic both informative and helpful.
Hi, welcome to the Help My Wealth podcast, Money Rules or Money Rules. My name is Hamish Ferguson, and today David Lennox from our Sydney office and I will be discussing in a shorter format three signs you might be ready for your second investment property. Hope you enjoy.
Well, Hamish, it's really good to see you, and thanks for joining us today. How are you?
Doing really well, thanks, Dave. You know, just after Christmas, so it's still pretty fresh in the air.
Yeah, feeling fresh, feeling ready to go.
Absolutely. I'll see how I go by October, but right now, fighting fresh.
Now, look, we've both been doing this for a long time, finance broking and a few other things. In terms of how we tend to categorise borrowers out there, right, we've got our obviously first-home buyers, and then we've got people who are starting out on their investment property journey. So they might buy their first and only investment property. And then there's people that we refer to, you and I and our firm on our website, we call them portfolio builders. And really a portfolio builder is starting when they get their second investment property. Would you agree with that's a fair way to describe that?
Yeah, it's surprising how many people actually do their first, but actually don't make it to their second or third. And, you know, I think one of our specialties is helping people get past that point of inertia where they move into that, you know, becoming serious when it comes to building a property portfolio.
So a portfolio builder, someone buying their second investment property. So they've got a home, they've got their first investment property. They think they've done enough, as you've just alluded to. How does a client know that they might be right to go for a second investment and enter this, what do we call it, an elite field, the portfolio builder? How does someone know that they're okay and that, or that they'll be okay to buy a second investment property?
Yeah, okay. No, a good, great question. And I think it's something that people should be able to see those markers starting to come around when they're ready. I mean, for me, I think, you know, you've bought your first investment property and there's a couple of signs. So the first one is, I think there is a time frame. So you sort of don't want to buy your second property too quickly after you've bought your first, right? I think so. So you might find you've woken up, you bought your first investment property a couple of years ago. All right. So it might be a bit quicker than that, might be a bit longer, but around that sort of 2 year mark. All right. So, and so now you're starting to get to understand the what happens. You understand, you've got a good property manager, hopefully, they're communicating with you well. You've possibly, depending on whether you bought existing or new, you might have had a few little things go on at the moment. It could be a couple of changes of tenants, it might be you've had a couple of repairs come up. And so you're starting to get a bit of an idea of the rhythm of what's going on. All right. So, that's the first thing. You want to feel comfortable that you've made the right decision for the first time. All right. So
and so you talk about a period of time, 5 years, 2 or 3 years, where do you feel might be an average number that people can maybe have in their heads, even though that might be, it will be different from case to case, but
yeah, I'd love it to be around the 2 to 3 year mark. All right. So, and that's not always going to be, you know, the case, but I think either going back to either ourselves or your broker to revisit things at that sort of 2 to 3 year mark, just to sort of see, are you on track? You know, are you ready yet? You know, and hopefully you've got this confidence from the first time around that means that you want to start thinking or planning for that next one.
Mm-hmm.
So
Okay.
And also that depends a little bit on property markets as well. So whether the market's, you know, done average, you know, a bit slow, or the market's done well, as to whether that sort of comes around. Because as we talk about later, one of the things that'll come up is making sure that you can actually complete on it. But sorry, Dave, you were going to ask a question then.
Well, so we've talked about time. So to go that second investment property, number one is give it a bit of time. Yeah. And what might be another indicator for someone, or, you know, for someone to know that they can make that step into being a portfolio builder?
Yeah, well, I think, again, at this sort of two-year mark, so you're getting a bit of an idea of what your cash flow looks like. And that's not just the cash flow of the investment property, but what's going on the home front as well. And obviously, over the years, depending on where interest rates are, you know, we have to factor in what the cash flow required to make sure it's a safe investment property purchase, what that will look like, all right? So at the moment, we're talking early 2024, and interest rates are at a, you know, 10 to 12-year high. And so you want to go into this conversation knowing that, you know, an investment property will probably cost you a little bit of money, all right? So, and that depends on what style of property you buy and things like that. But what I typically say to people is, look, you want to factor into your calculations that as a worst case scenario, and I do mean worst case scenario, that the property might cost you somewhere between $200 and $250 a week. All right. So, and that's factoring in what if I can only get principal and interest and not just interest only? What if it means I'm buying something that, you know, that has a lot of depreciation attached to it, but might not have as strong a cash flow, because we've bought it for growth reasons rather than cash flow reasons. So there's a lot that goes into this. But if you keep this in mind, if I can regularly save a good $250 a week and that not be used for a while. So I'm not talking about, I put away $250, but then I pull it out because I need to pay the electricity bill. I'm saying a genuine $250 a week that's not required. So if you've got that sort of cash flow happening at the moment and you've been able to do that for a good sort of, let's call it 6 months, then that's probably the second ingredient you sort of go, oh, okay, that's another sign that you might be ready to sit down with somebody.
Yeah, how will people know that their cash flow is all right? Because a lot of us, you know, in our busy lives, there might be money sitting in a few different areas or different investments. Is it the fact that they're not hurting, like they're getting through the year okay? Like how in all the clients you've dealt with that are in this situation, how do you know? How do you get a feel for whether they're managing that?
So, I mean, look, probably an easier way, or there's probably two things that I sort of suggest to clients is, the first one is, look, if you're wanting to test your cash flow, and let's say we pick that figure of $250 a week, go home tonight, set up your repayments and start paying an extra $250 a week off your home loan. Right, and leave that alone for 3 or 4 months and see how it goes. Now, if you've already done that and you've got extra payments going off your home loan, then great, that's a way we can sort of test that, and that you haven't had to redraw that money out or anything like that. Another way to do it is, you know, and look, this requires a little bit of work, is that let's say you've got 3 bank accounts. You might go back 4 months and you might look at what those bank accounts were 4 months ago. Mm-hmm. Let's say, you know, today is the 1st of January. We go back to the 1st of August and we go, all right, in the accounts I had $8,000, all right? And then today we look at it and we go, 4 months later, I've got $12,000, all right? So based on that, we know our accounts have grown by $4,000 over that period of time, all right? And it's not hard to go, all right, well, that's 4 months, that means per month, and do the maths to come up with that figure as to what your cash flow is. Now, depending on what you've got, it might be that it's a little bit more complicated than that, but you should be able to find a couple of markers, you know, these days with internet banking, to be able to go back and look at these things and be able to work out sort of where that cash flow sits. So if I can give you a very, very quick example, so I had a client that had $400,000 sitting in an offset account and their bank accounts were all over the place, all right? So good money coming in, and I just said to them, look, would you mind going back a year and having a look to see what was in the offset account? And interestingly enough, in this case, the wife came back to me a little bit, you know, feeling sheepish because the account was sitting at $400,000 12 months ago. So even though they felt like they were doing okay, it was that, you know, we felt comfortable because we had the money in an offset account. It wasn't because they were really genuinely growing, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I understand. Yep. So, I mean, you mentioned 250. I know that's very rule of thumb, but, you know, that's 12 and a half grand a year. So if someone can spare, you know, 10 or 12 and a half, or save it in another part of their life, right, maybe they're well placed to handle the second investment property. Yeah.
Yeah, correct.
Right. Yeah.
And then they might have had a couple of years where they've had some good family holidays, all right? So, and I think it's okay at times to say, well, you know, okay, we've sort of demonstrated that we've been able to put this money away, as long as you acknowledge that we might not be able to go on those holidays in the future, all right, if that's what we're relying on changing, all right?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So look, there are lots of ways to do it, but I think we need to make sure that it is a genuine saving, because, yeah, you know, we just don't want to put them into another, you know, call it $750,000 worth of debt, and then all of a sudden find 6 months down the track that, you know, cash flow's not right.
Yeah, look, I agree with you there. I think the other thing to keep in mind is, by the time people are buying their second investment property, they've probably been in the property market 10 years, eight to 12 years. So they're fairly knowledgeable by that point, and they're not as scared of the cash flow or intimidated. So that's why I have found it strange that a lot of people sit on one investment property for quite some time or forever. Maybe there's circumstances that prevent. Not everyone wants to look after three or four or five properties in their life. But I'm surprised a lot of people don't take that step, because a little bit as parents, the difference between zero child and one child is just massive, bigger than the difference of one to two, two to three, you know, for want of an analogy. But the difference I find, and you and I are both investors, the difference between zero and one is the biggest one. And then one to two, big, but not as big, but one to two, two to three, you know. And of course, you become then confident. And the thing we tend to manage for the people, once they get to the two mark, they want to get to three, four, five. So at that point, you and I, we tend to be managing, holding people back a little bit, aren't we? Don't you find that? Do you find that?
Yeah, look, I do. Look, absolutely. And I think sometimes people can second guess themselves. They can almost, and you might have heard the phrase, it's almost like self-sabotage, right? I can't do this yet, because what happens if I get something wrong? And, or they look at their internet banking and go, oh, what happens if there was another, you know, $750,000 worth of debt on there? But how am I going to feel about that? And I think we've been through 5 years of now of people being probably feeling a little bit less certain about careers and income. And so that confidence about cash flow also comes back to, do I feel confident that I'm in a job, a career, a business that is going to support that ongoing?
Okay, so far, in terms of the principle of becoming a portfolio builder, we've got time and a rule of thumb, maybe 2 to 3 years, and then managing the cash flow, that's another important one. Any other major factors that you've got there to help people understand when they'll be ready?
Yeah, so the equity question is another one. So, you know, essentially, again, we've got a home. Hopefully there's some equity in that. We've got the investment property that's starting to build some equity as well. But you come along and you know, if I can give a basic example, we go and buy a $750,000 property, and then we need to make sure that we've got enough equity in property, or cash, or a combination of the two, to give us enough for the deposit and costs to buy that property. Now, there can be some different sort of schools of thought about, you know, this in terms of do we need a 20% deposit plus costs, which is probably going to equate to about 25% of the purchase price. You know, are we comfortable with mortgage insurance going into this one, knowing that I think mortgage insurance, you might agree with this, Dave, is one of the things that you can get some tax deductibility out of when you're buying a property, because it's a loan cost. So obviously, guys, please talk to your accountant about this one. So there can be this, you know, call it, you know, minimum, call it 15% that you need in equity to be able to pull out to make this work, up to 25% in equity. That yep. is, it's sort of going to be this rough rule of thumb that we need to be able to get to. Yep. Now, that's obviously going to slide depending on purchase price. You know, you decide you want to buy a rental property for 1.2 mil, the numbers are going to change. But that 15 to 25% in terms of available equity to pull out, which, you know, comes back to being able to go back to a broker and really crunch the numbers about how you get this as well. So, yep. So generally, though, you want to feel confident that the two properties you've got are moving along in the right way, they've built some equity, and there's a little bit of room to move to be able to get the next one.
Got it. Excellent. So building equity, yeah. And again, that's a little bit of the time equation, isn't it? So
it is time,
getting used to the cash flow aspect, building equity. One of the central principles of building portfolios is we don't save cash for deposits. We are using equity, just to be clear on that front. A lot of misconceptions about property investments for people who are buying their first one is that they're trying to save money for the first deposit, and we pretty much always use equity, don't we, Hamish?
Yeah. Absolutely. And you want to, you know, not just the minimum equity, if possible, you want to actually build a bit of a buffer into it so that you've got that ability that, I don't know, if the air conditioner blows up or if something goes on that you need to be able to, that you're actually drawing on the investment money to be able to do that rather than pulling the, your precious redraw out of your home loan to be able to do that as well. So the equity question is important.
Yeah, and people always talk about tax as well. I mean, where would you position that? Is that a important consideration for the investors, or certainly people that are embarking on several investment properties?
Look, I think it's always important to say you don't go and invest in something just to purely save tax, all right? So, but on the same token, you know, generally, you know, and I think you might agree with me, Dave, a lot of people have come in the door the first time and they might go, I'm sick of paying so much tax. What can I do to do this? I've heard property is a way to manage the tax bill, all right? So, and I think, you know, there's probably been a little bit of, it's not quite as attractive in a lot of areas as what it once was, and that's why you need to talk to the right people here. But essentially, you know, you go into property and the investment loan and the costs associated with the property are all good ways, all tax deductible ways rather than use the word good. All right. So you might wake up again, it might be 2 or 3 years later, you might look at your tax return and you might go, oh, far out, you know, the tax man's taking all this money off me. And for all of those people out there that are paying, you know, what they might call in their world, you know, overs in terms of tax, that's a good reason to come back, especially if they've already bought their first investment property, and say, hey, if I've got the cash flow, if I've got the equity, and if I'm feeling like my tax bill's starting to grow a bit because of my career and income, is this the time? All right. So, and hopefully, you know, that's definitely not trying to be aggressive there, but it's a safe-ish way of saying, well, if you've got those 2 or 3 ingredients coming along nicely, then, you know, it's time to come and see us.
Very good. And anything else you'd like to say in terms of the principles of building, you know, becoming a portfolio builder? At the moment, we've got time, you know, the 2 or 3 years as a benchmark, managing cash flow. You know, can you manage 250 a week around that 10 to 15K, let's say it, and building equity, managing the tax situation. Is there anything else you'd like to add in order to wrap this up?
Yeah, well, look, I think when you've got your second property, there's a whole range of other topics that can come up as well, which, you know, and it could be that the style of property you want to do second time around is a little bit different. So we don't want people to feel like they're locked into this is the only way you do property. You know, if we think out loud, you know, it could be that you're looking for some sort of dual income property, which has been quite successful over the last sort of, call it 5 to 7 years. You know, you might be looking at commercial property because you're attracted to the slightly higher yield and you've got good equity in property and you feel like that's something you're ready for. It could be a small development that you want to do at some point in time where, you know, you do a bit of construction and things like that, which, you know, some people really like that style of thing. It's not for everyone, but, you know, I guess what I don't want people to feel like is that this conversation is just locked into one process. I think you just got to work out where you start. You got to ask the right questions and, you know, but if you've got those three ingredients coming along nicely, then it's a reason to talk.
Right. Awesome. Well, that's a really, really good wrap. In terms of just quickly, bullet pointed for us, principles of lending, like in terms of someone that's got now quite a bit of debt, they might still have a home loan, several investment loans, any major things you've talked about equity and borrowing the 15 to 20% against another asset, but any other principles for people out there that are going to become portfolio builders?
Yeah, look, I think, and I know you'll probably nod as I say this, Dave, but, you know, the one principle that I like to try and stick with is not to overcapitalize, all right? Sorry, I won't use the word overcapitalize. Overdo it, you know. You don't want to be left with $5 in the bank each week because you've gone and bought six properties too quickly, all right? Yep. So, and we've seen that over the years where people sort of go and they go again and they go again and they go again, and then all of a sudden they're ringing you 4 years later going, I've got no way of actually getting through a bit of a sticky time. All right. Yep. So, you know, if you're young and you've got time on your side, then, you know, realizing you're going to go through probably four or five property cycles over your life, right? And if you're in your early 40s, it could be you still go through two or three property cycles in your life. And so planning to time yourself and just feel like you can do this with the right patience levels is important. So having the right buffers, you know, like always making sure you've got, you know, somewhere between 3 and 6 months worth of living expenses up your sleeve. So that way, if you hit a few bumps along the way, you've got some reserves, you know, to be able to call on. And you know, I think one of the things you've often said, Dave, is just having patience and realizing that you don't have to do this tomorrow. And it's plan then action, and they're the ways to get through this successfully.
Awesome. So to summarize, bit of time, managing the cash flow, building equity, managing that tax situation, and then, yeah, having buffers and being patient. Yeah, is that a fair summary?
Absolutely.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for your time, mate. Really appreciate it. Thank you for everyone for listening. And just, just to summarize, please, below in the show notes, you'll see our website and contact details, and we look forward to helping you further in your property journey. Thanks very much.
Future. Thanks. Bye-bye.
The information discussed by the Help My Wealth and the Money Rules podcast is for education and entertainment purposes only and is general in nature, and it is not advice. It is not intended as a substitute for professional finance, legal, or tax advice. It is aimed to provide a general understanding of each topic and should not be relied upon to make an investment or financial decision. It is strongly suggested that you seek professional advice regarding your own individual circumstances before making a financial decision. Help My Wealth and the hosts of the Money Rules and Money Rules podcast are not aware of your personal financial circumstances. Before making any financial decisions, you should read the product disclosure statement and, if necessary, consult a licensed financial professional. Do not take financial advice from a podcast. In the spirit of reconciliation, Help My Wealth and the Money Rules or Money Rules podcast acknowledge the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea, and community. We pay our respects to past, present, and emerging elders. We extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people today.